Now I'm going to try very hard to see that Myrtos Petrius gets a fair amount of time. You know, I can't say we save the best for the first and the last, Brenda and Myrtos. And we have me stuck in between. So anyway, I've worked in Vietnam since 1984. I've done mostly biomonitoring. We were given an idea where to look because of the spray records and then the work of Gene and Steve Stellman to refine the spray records. But that's simply where it was sprayed, where there was a possibility that the dioxin that stays a long time that causes huge health damages might get into people from that area. And we wanted to know, where did it get into people? Was it still around? And we found it was still around. I don't have any... although actually, Susan, we do have a conflict of interest. We just wrote a chapter together in the new book, Dioxins and Health, third edition, and we spoke about Vietnam. So for the... we got a free copy of the book. So maybe we are biased, but not too much. This is what the fixed-wing spraying looked like. But remember, helicopters, and I think this is a naval vessel, also did spraying. People were spraying around there. You've seen this over and over, but remember, this is the south of Vietnam only. The other half of the country isn't shown. And remember that most of these areas in the south of Vietnam were not sprayed. Again, the orange stripe is why it's called orange. It's not orange. And, you know, what we found is the TCDD, the dioxin that contaminated Agent Orange, was elevated in some ranch hands. And TCDD was reported in some wildlife in southern Vietnam, which I did in collaboration with a number of Vietnamese colleagues. There's no evidence that these babies, who you get by Googling Agent Orange in Vietnam, have anything to do with Agent Orange. But when you Google Agent Orange and Agent Orange in Vietnam, these come up quickly. They are malformed babies, maybe some thyroid problems with the big eyes, part of the brain is missing, and it's very unfortunate that this exists for these babies. And we know that there can be malformations, there can be cancer, there can be endocrine disruption, there can be a lot of things caused and have been caused in people and in rodents, and I guess monkeys now that I think of it, endometriosis from rhesus monkeys, published years ago. So you can get in humans as well as other animals. As Linda Birnbaum always points out, people and rats have something in common. We're mammals, we're vertebrates, and it is a way of trying to project what you might see in people without deliberately dosing them with toxic chemicals. And there are people, by the way, in this audience, Gene, who at NIH did look for the question that came up earlier, who's more susceptible, are there ways of determining that? And I think we're still looking. Gene, are you still looking? Or?
Still looking.
Okay, not determined yet. Yeah, that question came up earlier. Okay, this again just takes us closer to where we are now. This is not doing anything with Agent Orange. This is what you've got to do before you go in. You've got to make sure that the unexploded ordnance are no longer there. Otherwise, someone's going to get killed in trying to do a cleanup or remediation. And these are people looking for the unexploded ordnance. This is a member of the Vietnam military. Guarding a dioxin-contaminated hotspot in Vietnam. And this is one of the ceremonies talking about the remediation of Da Nang, where a lot of the money is being spent. As you saw, a huge amount of the U.S. money is going into environmental, not into human studies, remediation, help. And some of us would like to see the ratio reversed more for the people. And then the other thing you didn't notice, possibly, was for that $5 million that I think was shown earlier, that isn't just for Agent Orange. That's for disability. That's for a lot of different things. USAID is spending some of the money for HIV, which is very laudable, for invalids, people who've had problems with mobility, all of which is very good. It's not necessarily always related to the war in Vietnam, nor is it necessarily related to Agent Orange. This is what some of the areas would look like if you took a picture of the contaminated areas at the hotspots. The hotspots are not the only areas that are contaminated. Their hotspot is an area where there's a huge level of dioxins found. We found a million parts per trillion years ago. I don't think it was the last millennium, as you implied. I'm not that old. But more recently than that, a million parts per trillion, and we found 400 parts per trillion in the people's body. And as Brenda Ashkenazi just pointed out, the levels in Seveso, the levels now in the United States or Italy are about 1.6, 2 parts per trillion, not a few hundred. And the few hundred that we reported in blood from Benoit, one of the hotspots, the Air Force Base where Agent Orange was stored near what used to be Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City, compares with the 1,800 PPT, if you take Bauman's original report, Bauman-Nesselson's published in Environmental Health Perspectives, and do it on a lipid basis. So the numbers are pretty high in the people. Not Seveso type 1 child of 56,000, but fairly high compared to the maybe 20 parts per trillion that toxic equivalents today in many of us in this room, if we're average American adults. Most of us are old enough to be adults. And I don't know whether we're average or not, but we're not average? Okay. I take your word for it, as I have in the past. Okay. So the Vietnam government, after a lot of discussion with U.S. government, USAID, U.S. EPA, and this government advisory group from the United States and Vietnam, decided, well, they cleaned up one of the hot spots, just straight as you heard Susan Hammond describe. They dumped the material in a toxic waste site, and they moved it there. And they decided not to use high temperature incineration of over 1,000 degrees centigrade, because that was expensive. And they decided to try this relatively new in-ground thermal. You heat it up to maybe 300 degrees centigrade instead of, you heat the soil that's been contaminated. There's some discussion about how much is going to American companies, how much is going to Vietnamese, what's going to go on after this. Is this a one-time project to advise what should happen to other dioxin-contaminated spots in Vietnam or not? Or should you do a Seveso type approach and make a beautiful park and monitor it frequently for dioxin escaping? The Vietnamese government, working with USAID for the most part, has gone for Da Nang only so far, this thermal experiment, which is going to be tested to see how efficacious it is. And if they like it, if there's money, they may continue in Benoit. They may do it elsewhere. The little hotspots that the Hatfield Environmental Group pointed out, and we pointed out in an article in the Journal of the American Public Health Association, from blood levels and milk levels, there are lower levels found in other areas of Vietnam. Those red spots were areas were sprayed that were known about, and G and Steve Stellman have refined that with their nice work with potential areas for dioxin contamination. Right now, the Da Nang remediation is about to be started up. In a few years, we should have data. Maybe this time next year, we'll have the first data back. Does this thermal approach in ground heating at about 300 centigrade knock the bromines off the dioxin? Is it affordable? And the idea of the bioremediation, which works beautifully in a laboratory, just does not work on these large-scale projects, which GE and EPA learned on the Hudson River when they considered bioremediation of the PCBs and the sediment of the Hudson River. And they finally decided this wasn't going to do the job, and they just dredged it up. and they send it to my new home in Texas, to a toxic landfill. Anyway, that's where we are now. I wanted to give you a very quick summary, and the point that's been made, you know, what about the Vietnamese, where men, women, and children were exposed, and with Brenda's very interesting an elegant description of possible epigenetic effect for many generations. This provides us with an opportunity, however tragic, that maybe we're going to find, well, we should learn, we should be able to learn, I think, with good epidemiologists and good biomonitoring, what the future generations may have, second, third, fourth, not only zero or one generation, if we're talking about people or animals. Thank you very much. Are there any quick questions I could answer? Yes, Alana.
How many years is the stable of the soil?
Long, long time. I don't know whether we're talking hundreds of years, and it's going to depend on the conditions. It's also in Vietnam. Some of the Vietnamese researchers believe they're seeing it moved by, moved along with the rain and floods and so on. Brenda.
So I know it's a long half-life chemical, but we have an opportunity now if there's going to be remediation to actually find, to compare two populations, one that has not had the remediation yet, and to look mm-hmm. at their exposures at 0.0, and then look to see how the remediation may actually increase the slope of the half-life.
In the people or
in
an animal?
In the people.
Yeah.
So is anybody trying to monitor?
No, the money is being put on the environmental side, and that's a reversal. The 33 committee is an environmental background committee. The committee 1080, which used to be in charge for Vietnam, was Ministry of Health, so they thought like health people. Now they think more like environmental people, and the military is also very involved in this. So unfortunately, from my perspective, it's too much environmental, too little people.
Just a question about your experience in southern, in the Mekong region up to the Central Highlands. Historically, in the 50s and early 60s, it was the use of health clinics sponsored by the CAA through the government of Vietnam, the Ngo Dinh Diem government, that established these outposts in rural locations, and that those then eventually became